It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running for this Thursday, the 31st day of March, 2022, the final day of March, 2022. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That, of course, is where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. In the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and great globe round. Hi, I'm Robin, Thorn in the Side Thursday, final day of March, as said. And so every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. In this case, we use the final day of the month to extend our profound thanks to our Patreon subscribers, that merry little band, who helps to keep the program on the air, along with the PayPal subscribers and the a la carte contributors. Thank you also very much, but particular thanks to our PayPal subscribers this evening. And thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, letting me know that we are 999 on the broadcast spectrum. So what that means, in by way of thanks to our Patreon subscribers, is we say thanks to Troy. Thank you, Troy. And thank you to Dave and the Blind. Thank you to Janice. Thank you to David in San Diego. Thank you to Eve. Thank you to Rico in DeBerg. Thank you to JR, Jake. Thank you. Thank you to Nancy. Thank you to Jimmy in the Great Northwest. Thank you, Bernadette, She of Prees Trees, the miracle salve that makes life so much better. Thank you, Bernadette. Thank you to Ed. Thank you to Oak. Thank you to Mark. Thank you to Michael of the Guffins. Thank you, Baltimore Bob. Thanks to Jeff in Slow. Thank you, Kay. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you, James. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Annette. This is Horn Family Community Congregation member Annette, not Annette, formerly my spouse. Thank you to Joanne. Thank you to Lori. Thank you to Joyce. Thank you to Vernon in San Diego. Thank you, Kat. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you, Barbara. Thank you, KW. Thank you, Irwin, there in Montana. Thank you, Barb. Thank you to Horst in Taiwan. Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Terrace. Different Robin. Thank you to Fab. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. And thank you, of course, to Jeremy in Vermont. Thank you again to all of our Patreon subscribers. Oh, I don't know. One of these days we'll have so many subscribers at Patreon and PayPal maybe that that'll be enough to keep us going. But as it stands, as we face the end of the month of March here in the steamy, to say the least, fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, where it's 82 degrees and I think the humidity is so high it's about to rain inside the studio, the fundraising goal to end March is a grim $835. So that means ending March, we are short for Thursday, for Wednesday, and all but $65 of Tuesday. It's rough. I hope we can knock some of that out. But thanks to everybody that's gotten us as close as we've gotten. It's just a brutal time of year, and it's a brutal time right now, and I certainly understand each and every bit of that. Oh, and by the way, on the way out of the program yesterday evening, I said, what do you want to bet that Podbean shuts me down with this upload? Sometimes I hate being right. I'm just going to leave that tattered, frayed purple robe with the appliqué moons and stars and will thee kiss me in the dark, baby, written in glow-in-the-dark ink across the front. I'm going to leave that in the closet. There's room in the closet now. I'm going to leave that in the closet along with the magic eight ball with the cracked screen that always says answer hazy, ask again later. And quit being damn right about things, because no sooner did I shut everything down, close the streams, I did the upload to WhiteRoseSociety.org, and then boom.
You have uploaded too much this month.
Which is absolutely hilarious, because I've been with Podbean for a long time, and they didn't used to, and I've been doing a 3-hour program from the moment this program went on the air, and only in the last, year and a half, 2 years, did it become a problem for Podbean, because they want more money. Everybody wants more money. So, suffice to say, and if somehow or another you manage to hear this program, maybe over at WhiteRoseSociety.org, please bookmark White Rose Society, because Podbean sucks and is highly unreliable. And it seems now that if I don't take a few days off every month, that we wind up not being able to upload the last few shows of the month to Podbean. Because, and I guess another part of it is, there's just not that many people doing 3-hour radio shows anymore. This used to be the format. And it was what I committed to, and it's what I stay committed to. Because you can't get much done in an hour. And frankly, I'm ever so grateful for everybody who listens to the program in whatever manner you choose. But the only way this program exists as a podcast is because we do the live show. I can't imagine pre-recording an hour every couple of... No. What we talk about happens on a day-by-day, sometimes hour-by-hour basis. And that is the beauty of this format. We can deal with things as they come. And I mention all of this because I had a little tech conversation with Brother Deacon Asa after the program last night, immediately after finding out that, no, in fact, Podbean would not let me upload the 30th or the 31st. Please bookmark WhiteRoseSociety.org, because there's no limits there. And it works pretty well. And you'll always be able to get the podcast there, because I load it there, and I load it at Podbean. And, you know, no, I guess we're not quite the big time, but hell, it blows my mind that we're closing in on... We're closing in on 500,000 downloads. And for a little program like this, that's actually saying something. So White Rose is always there. And if the program doesn't show up on Podbean, please do not assume that I just decided to take the night off and live a life of indolent boredom, because I never do that. You know, when this program isn't there, I'm either sick, Appalachian Power's brutally expensive coal-fried, antiquated, held together with baling wire, spit and toilet paper, and a little bit chewing gum wrapper a la MacGyver has gone down, or Chantel has gone down. Or I have to absolutely be somewhere that is absolutely required. I mean, I'm here. I almost dare say I'm the hardest working woman in this business. Oh, and by the way, speaking of which, happy Trans Day of Visibility. The Trans Day of Visibility comes around every 31st day of March, and it is a day in which trans people show themselves out to the world in a celebration of the fact that we have rights and we belong here too. Last year was my first. This was my second. And it feels like quite a change. Bear with me for just a minute with this. It is quite a change. But I'm proud. It took me half a century to get my own freedom. And in that first Trans Day of Visibility, last year, I was happy just to be out at last, at long last. But in less than a year from that day to the beginning of 2022, I came so far that I realized that I had the strength in me to step up and make history. To step up and become the first out trans person ever to run for a seat in the West Virginia legislature. And yes, oh yes indeed, I am proud of that, and I will always be proud of that. I'll be prouder still if I can win the primary and become the first trans woman in the history of any party in West Virginia ever to be their party's nominee for a seat in the legislature. But as I've said, the real pride will come when I win that seat, take the oath, and that's when the real history will be made. So marking the Trans Day of Visibility today over on Facebook, I put up a post, and it will probably sink like a stone without your help, because apparently if you do not attach a photo, nobody looks at it. People look at pictures. They do not read text. But I didn't post a photo because you can't do two things at one time on Facebook. Their dime store algorithms don't account for that. So I couldn't put up a picture for Trans Day of Visibility and at the same time talk about my candidacy, talk about how that fits perfectly within the Trans Day of Visibility. Trans people taking their place in our culture, in this world. And I couldn't put up the picture because I wanted to put up the Act Blue link. And so if you follow me on Facebook or if we're friends on Facebook, please go over to my Facebook page, my regular personal page, Robin Kincaid, because I'm still trying to get the stupid Facebook political page up. But you'll find that post, and it's got a link to the Act Blue contribution page. And if you would just be so very, very kind to share it so that other people can see it, share it far and wide, I would so sincerely appreciate it because, and this isn't necessarily about me, it's about my campaign to a certain extent, but it's also about something else. You've heard some of them on the air here. I've shared some of them. I've seen it so many times on social media, because here on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, I have yet another story about Queen Jo of the House of Manchinborn and how he has screwed America some more, along with his bestie, Kirsten Curtsy Cinema. But I hear it time and again. I do interviews. My friend Nicole Sandler, my pal Tara, other places as well. And they say, "Come on, Robin. Can't West Virginia do any better than Joe Manchin?" And then I have to explain the nature of the political scene, the political situation in the state of West Virginia. But in answer to that question, yeah, West Virginia can do better than Joe Manchin. Because I, on my worst day, am better than Joe Manchin on his best. By orders of freaking magnitude. I am better than any of the miscreants, bullies, punks, and broad form mediocrities who form the majority in the House of Delegates in the state of West Virginia. I'm kinder, more compassionate, friendlier, nicer, and smarter. So yeah, West Virginia can do better. And I am the better that West Virginia can do. So if you don't mind, go and find that post and share it. Share it far and wide so that other people can see that West Virginia can do better. Hey, anybody know Bette Midler? Try to get Bette Midler, of course she's not on Facebook, but try to get Bette Midler's eyeballs on this. A few great big whopping money checks and we could probably sweep to victory in this primary. Absolutely paper the district in signs and be positively pervasive with social media. But for every person who's not a West Virginian who has said, can't West Virginia do better? God, there are oodles of West Virginians, thousands of us in this state, who yearn to do better. And so on this Trans Day of Visibility, I'm trying to be visible as the person who can do better, who is better. So, again, go share it. I'll put something up on Twitter, but it's you know, really hard to do much with 140 characters or whatever it is. But it would be great to nationalize this campaign. It would be so fantastic to be able to look at people and say, no, we are not the stereotype in West Virginia that you have so long plastered us with. We are progressive, we are forward-thinking, compassionate, liberal. We are straight, gay, lesbian, trans, bi, we are cis, we are everything. And that's why I say that my campaign is hashtag for all of us. So I appreciate your kindness. Thank you, George. George got us started, and we are now down to $810 to go to finish the month of March. Thank you, George. I cannot thank you enough for getting us started. I hope you'll have company. By the way, Jeremy says, update, now that spring is here, we need to know how things have changed for Rush, you know, down in the hot place. Are the pineapples ripe yet? A little more tang and sting isn't that bad after all. Well, I need to clear something up, Jeremy. Ripeness is not the standard of the pineapples that Rush Limbaugh enjoys in hell. In fact, you don't want them fresh. You want them real hard and spiny and not even a little bit squishy. And let me tell you, the pineapple shipments that have been reaching perdition of late are harder than Babylonian arithmetic. So there's that. And Rush has now been sober for well over a year. How about that? And I am more compassionate, just not toward that asshole. But anyway, I mentioned Queen Joe of the Mansion Born and how he has fucked America again, and in particular, working people. And he did it in conjunction with Kirsten Curtsy Cinema, and her colleague from the state of Arizona, Mark Kelly, who is actually running to keep his seat in Arizona, and this certainly doesn't seem like a well-advised political position. It has to do with President Biden's nominee to head the wage and hour division of the Department of Labor, because that position does, in fact, require Senate confirmation. And the guy that President Biden has nominated to do that is a man named David Weil, W-E-I-L. He's not exactly a novice in this. He ran the same wage and hour division under Barack Obama from 2014 to 2017. But as the head of the wage and hour division, David Weil did get himself into some hot water. I mean, not with you and me. God knows, not with working people. People who rely on a paycheck for a living. No, David Weil is in the bad graces of Queen Jo of the Mansion Born and Kirsten Curtsey Cinema, and Mark left his brain in space. Kelly, not his brain, his heart. I left my heart in low Earth orbit. Sorry. Especially, Matt, really, sorry. That just occurred to me. God, what am I doing singing? At any rate, they had a procedural vote in the Senate, and all 50 Republicans and those three voted against advancing the nomination of David Weil, even though he has done a perfectly good job in the past. Well, again, for people who work for a living, neither Joe Manchin nor Kirsten Curtsey Cinema nor Mark Low Earth Orbit Kelly work for a living. I don't know if they ever have. I guess in theory Kirsten has, but at some point she has certainly forgotten. So what sort of wild-eyed notion is it that made Joe, Queen of the Senate and to the mansion born, decide to tank David Weil? Well, see, David Weil has this crazy idea that people who work for a living should be treated with a degree and level of dignity. And sometimes that dignity includes being considered an employee of a company. You know where this is going. I mean, this is a liberal progressive congregation, family, community. And we know how thoroughly fetishized the employment status of independent contractor has become among the ownership class in this country. Well, David Weil, in his previous stint as head of wage and hour, he at one point in time tried to classify independent contractors as employees. Now, people who have had a cup of coffee in law school, like Darlene from Connecticut and Billable Rick and Steve in New York, myself, we know how pernicious the independent contractor status can be. Independent contractor can be anything. Can mean anything from, well, yeah, you drive a truck cross country, but you're an independent contractor, so you're not covered by workers' comp, to the paperwork nightmare that occurs every year when you go to file your taxes and you have to deal with the fact that you're an independent contractor and your finances are in a wreck and you're desperate to try to figure it out. You get the idea. Deeming someone an independent contractor relieves an employer of a broad and deep and vast number of requirements that basically amount to human rights for working people. So, CNN reached out to Kirsten Kurtzey Sinema's spokescreep, and the statement that was generated, Jesus, passive voice, Robin, this early on a Thursday.
As she promised Arizonans, Kirsten evaluates all nominees based on three criteria. Whether or not they are professionally qualified, believe in the missions of their agencies, and can be trusted to faithfully execute and uphold the law. Upon reviewing Mr. Weil's nomination, she has concerns. Oh, she has concerns. Kirsten is a concern troll. With his ability to faithfully execute and uphold the law. What?
What is he? Is he going to come to work in a little black trench coat with little black boots and a little black hat and a little black bandana? Or maybe it's a black KN95 mask. And unfaithfully execute the laws? Or let down the laws? It's disgusting. A White House spokesman said, confirming his nomination would be good for workers. We will continue to evaluate this nomination and how we move forward, but remain proud of the administration's pro-worker policies and work being done. It bummed out Senator Patty Murray of Washington, who runs the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. She said, I'm incredibly disappointed to see Dr. Weil, an exceptionally qualified nominee with a long track record fighting to ensure workers get the wages they've earned, did not get the votes tonight to be confirmed as administrator of the Wage and Hour Division of the Department of Labor. Despite this outcome, I will never stop fighting for working families and for a fully staffed Department of Labor with leaders committed to protecting workers. Kind of makes you wonder how thoroughly the DOL got gutted during the nightmare reign of Genghis Khan. So, once again, I mean, granted, Mark Kelly is a new addition to that toxic trifecta. But here we are. And so, Joe, and make no mistake, Joe was probably the leader on this. And, of course, he's got a statement, too. Are you sure? Queen Jo of the Mansion Born said, his previous statements are problematic for many West Virginia employees and business owners. Horseshit! Saying that independent contractors should be employees and get all the rights and benefits that accrue to employees that don't accrue to independent contractors is not of a single bit of concern to West Virginia employees, the working people of West Virginia. Joe is simply... Well, Joe is doing what was so blisteringly laid out in the recent New York Times investigation that some have called a stunning portrayal or a stunning portrait of political corruption. and how he has self-dealt during his entire political career to benefit his skeevy coal operation and the skeevy coal power plant that runs on some of the cheapest and dirtiest forms of that toxic fossil fuel. Joe's been wrapped up in the Granttown power plant going all the way back to 1987. It was back in 1987 that he used his power to make life better for some polluters who wanted to build the plant just a teeny tiny bit outside of Joe's district in the legislature. Because see, back in 1987, it was close enough to another coal-fried power plant that the scientists, who are real scientists at the EPA, were afraid that the two together could generate so much air pollution that it would make breathing a real challenge for the people who lived around it. And so then they set up, Joe did, and Joe's lawyers and Joe's creatures, they set up a series of alleged electricity companies. And the companies had contracts. The New York Times said it was like a, curious analogy, like a Russian nesting doll. And so Manchin's coal company provided this filthy gob. That's what it's called. It's a technical term, gob, which is actually a byproduct of coal mining. And he sold the gob to the Granttown plant, and the only company from which the Granttown plant has ever bought so much as a smidgen of coal is from Joe. Huh? How about that? And people who get electricity from the plant, well, their money winds up in, how about that? Joe Manchin's pocket. And it costs West Virginia money because that low-quality carboniferous filth doesn't even burn as cleanly as other coal, which doesn't burn cleanly. And this is the guy who, for reasons we have discussed in the past, sits as the chairman of the Senate Natural Resources Committee. Don't that just beat cat's bucking? And that's the way it's supposed to be in Joe's world. What do you want to bet that somewhere in that entire corrupt conglomeration, there's a shit ton, that's a complicated legal term, a shit ton of, oh, I don't know, independent contractors. Maybe the guys who haul the gob in trucks over taxpayer-funded roads, because the trucks are overloaded. The drivers have no union protections. And the drivers are, of course, wait for it, independent contractors. They've got they've got this little dodge, and we've talked about it in the past, where the contractors get paid per ton of coal hauled and not an hourly rate. They are responsible for their own workers' compensation, which they cannot afford. And they are told that they are independent contractors who own their own truck. The problem is you overload that truck long enough and drive it over coal truck destroyed roads. And by the time you actually pay for the truck, the truck has lost almost all its value, and you're back in the hole again. Ta-da! And what was the line again? That was just too good to leave alone.
Previous statements are problematic for many West Virginia employees and business owners.
Yeah, because I just know that those guys who are driving their bodies and their trucks into the dirt for substandard wages, they're sitting there worried about what would happen if they actually had to be employees with, you know, pension plans and health care benefits and workers' compensation and disability, that kind of, yeah. They lay awake at night saying, oh, God, what would happen if something happened to me and I actually had something to make sure that we didn't starve to death? And so it's not hard to see why he does what he does. Yeah, I thought we should talk about that. The future of work, Ron in Raleigh points out. I've sent you links to another video, some more news. I don't know if you appreciate his wacky style, but he's worth listening to on this subject. If you get a chance, watch his take on the future of work, the his in question is from Some More News. I'll check that out after the program. Well, that's a nice idea if anybody wants to reach out. Stephen, New York, says a Dolly Parton endorsement would be great, and I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. That would be big. Anybody wants to email or not email, but tweet or Facebook at her or whatever, that'd be fan-freaking-tastic. Yeah, I know. Employees with pension plans. Lee in New York says, that's so 20th century. And it makes employers so very, very sad. So I wonder what industries... wait a minute. There's mining in Arizona, isn't there? Probably involves a lot of really big, overloaded, overweight trucks. But Arizona has a higher population than that of West Virginia, so you have to wonder what... Well, probably, you know, under the aegis of the Chamber of Commerce, every potential employer. I mean, hell, who wants to pay unemployment and pay workers' comp and all of that stuff? Hurts the bottom line. And yet we come back to this notion of... If you cannot run a business without treating your employees fairly, that's kind of a sign that maybe, oh, just maybe you shouldn't be in business. So it seemed like a good place to start this evening. Meanwhile, over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, they're going to have a new contributor or something. In yesterday's program, we talked about the hiring over at the Tiffany Network, CBS, of Mick Mulvaney. Well, not to be outdone, apparently Fox News TV Radio Rwanda has now inked a deal with none other than Caitlyn Jenner. the trans woman who once said that her biggest challenge each and every day is figuring out what to wear. Oh. You know, not the struggle to have the rights that, say, cishet people, white cishet people in this country have. No, it's what to wear. Enough to make you eat dirt and run rabbits. So that probably means we'll have some interesting stupidity down the road, because Kate is not exactly a member of Mensa. Famous for being famous. Did I see somewhere that the odious Kardashians have a new show? Oh, the flag is falling. The Republic is doomed. But Tucky O'Rose is still running his yap. Our leaders are lying about Putin's invasion of Ukraine, and it's insulting. Well, at least he's gotten to the point where he says that they invaded Ukraine. Oh, let's see.
The U.S. has never had a president as reckless as Joe Biden is. Damn it. Today was shot day and I had to run a bunch of errands. And I forgot to run by the liquor store for a bottle of, for a 1.75 of Pepe Lopez. Because nothing any better than that can cure a statement like that.
Tucky O'Rose, honey. Where were you between January the 20th, 2017 and January the 20th, 2021? I mean, it's me, but somehow I think inciting an insurrection against the Constitution of the United States might somehow qualify as a little bit more reckless than anything Joe Biden has ever done in his entire life. Yeah, but this thing is a vehicle for what a fanboy Tucky O'Rose is of the right-wing fascist Nigel Farage. In 2014, he says Nigel Farage, as the head of the UK Independence Party, gave a speech to the EU. And was downright prophetic. I'm not sure if it's in the original German or not. Oh, well. Stupid is as stupid does. Life is like a box of X-Lax. At least over on Fox it is. Oh, and a little something. If you ever wondered, and you likely didn't, considering the fact that this criminal movement does things like assassinate doctors in church and bomb clinics. But if you ever wondered just how sleazy, dirty, filthy, nasty, vile, ugly, hateful, did I say disgusting? The fetus fetish industry could be. And if you ever wondered why I use the term fetus fetish, I think this story will pretty well put any questions about that to bed. This is the story of a wild-eyed maniac by the name of Linda or Lauren Handy and eight of her cronies. It was back in 2020 when Lauren Handy made an appointment at a women's reproductive health care center in D.C., gave a false name, showed up at the women's health care clinic, complete with all the tools with which to barricade herself and the eight other criminals inside. Crooks. Crooks. Here in 2022, there's been an announcement of new charges against Lauren Handy and the eight other crooks. So, what they did back in 2020, they engaged, Handy and the others engaged in a criminal conspiracy to obtain entrance to that D.C. women's clinic. It happened on October the 22nd, 2020. And their goal was to keep any woman inside from receiving any form of medical care. At the same time that Lauren Handy was giving the false name to the receptionist, one of her crooked crooked cronies was starting a Facebook Live video called No One Dies Today. So when the doors to the clinic opened at 9 a.m., Lauren Handy was there, and seven of the other animals drove their way into the clinic, bowling over one nurse, injuring her, while other members of the conspiracy barricaded the doors. And Handy, Lauren Handy was directing this entire event. Now, because these fetus fetish outfits are nothing if not Orwellian in their naming, they call themselves the Progressive Anti-Abortion Uprising. Progressive Grassroots Pro-Life Activists. There is nothing progressive about trying to deprive women of their constitutional rights. In a Facebook post, there is absolutely no remorse whatsoever. We will not stop mobilizing against violence until every unjust law has been struck down. Like I said, Orwellian. They are the violent ones. They were the violent ones. They barricaded themselves inside the clinic. But what has recently been discovered and by the way, the media contact for this filthy group is none other than that old terrorist, Randall Terry, who apparently is also a bigot, because when he was first contacted as the media contact for this, when contacted by BuzzFeed, Terry answered the phone in a bullshit, mocking Hispanic accent and identified himself as Jose Jimenez and then started giggling maniacally. He then said that the Women's Reproductive Health Care Center that was attacked by these terrorists in 2020 was an abortion mill. Well, part of the charges stemmed from a raid conducted by law enforcement. On the home of Lauren Hardy. Handy. Police showed up. And Lauren Handy was standing outside the house while a Fourth Amendment search was conducted of her premises. So a reporter for WUSA-TV said, "What are they looking for?" And Lauren Handy said, "People will freak out when they hear." What they found were 5 fetuses. I told you they are fetus fetishists. While they were in the clinic in 2020, they stole 5 fetuses. And put them in the freezer. Man, I thought it was weird when we had that story from years back about how Ted Brofromix, Rick Brofromix Santorum brought the dead fetus home and he and his wife snuggled it and showed the little decomposing fetus to their children, scarred for life. I thought that was weird. This is sick. Now, I don't know how it is in D.C., but most states have laws against this kind of thing. But these are sick people. These are disgusting people. I don't know what all the charges are arising from this terrorist attack on a women's health care center. But I feel comfortable in saying that Lauren Handy should never, ever, 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 ever again see the light of day as a free human being. This is the war that they are waging against women. Police, meanwhile, wouldn't answer questions about where the fetuses came from. I'm sure they had plans to, I don't know, wave them in the face of some poor woman trying to walk into a clinic for a goddamn pap smear or a mammogram. See? You know, just like that toxic granny in Massachusetts was doing, tormenting women going into a clinic up there that resulted in a 9-0 ruling by the Supreme Court of the United States, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg saying, no, the toxic grannies have a right to wave their signs in the faces of the women trying to get treatment. Because the buffer zone in Massachusetts was deemed to be unconstitutional. It said the body that has like a 600-foot buffer zone around the Supreme Court. This woman even has bragged, Lauren Handy, about having attacked the University of Washington and the fetal organs and labs, fetal organ labs and freezers there. But some self-hating woman by the name of Kristen Monahan said, "Well, we didn't steal anything from the freezers when we were at the University of Washington." Randall Terry said, "On a different time, the babies were retrieved."
There's a direct connection. We're going to lay out a timeline. Lay it out in prison, you filthy dog. Animal. Subhuman garbage. It's wearisome. So here we are at the top of the hour. And lines are open. Both lines, stress line and the Skype line. And we have at least gotten, thanks to George, we've gotten a $25 start on the end of March. And we're now 800 and 810 dollars away from being caught up. Oh, and a little heads up, be on the lookout. There is, and I've mentioned this before, there's a film out, Devil Put the Coal in the Ground, since we were talking about Joe Manchin and his toxic business. It's a documentary. When it was shot, a guy named Bob was involved with it. And it's getting some very high marks. It just won the 2022 DC Environmental Film Festival Audience Award for Best Feature Film. And it's going to be playing at various locations around the country in various film festivals. Matt in San Francisco, it's going to be playing there in April. You might look around. I have a feeling it would be an absolutely eye-opening evening out. Not just Matt, anybody in the Bay Area. What is the name of that festival? Let's see, it's also playing at the Finger Lakes Environmental Film Festival. It opened there 2 days ago. And it's been selected to start screening at the Sarasota Film Festival on April 1st. The Roxy Theater, Matt, and other members of the Horn Family Community Congregation. Hi, Cynthia. The Roxy Theater and the San Francisco Indie Fest Green Film Festival. It'll show at the Indie Fest in San Francisco on April the 17th. More importantly, though, if you'd like to see this film, it is viewable let me see if this still works. It's viewable online for a $10 donation to the Finger Lakes Film Festival. Just look up Devil Put the Coal in the Ground. The theme of it suggests it shows the linkage between the long, almost constant history of abuse of working people in Appalachia
from over a century ago to the very present day. Let's see. Oh, here's, this is fun. God, you can always count on him to do this stuff, can't you? We've had a Senator Bishop Willard Romney signing. Yep. The bishop is still worrying about how we will ever manage to keep Social Security alive, even though there are rather obvious and actually easy fixes. Well, they're easy if you're not Bishop Willard Romney and have spaceship money and have to do like upkeep on a horse. So just as was done to my generation back in the late 80s, old Tip O'Neill and Ronnie Reagan rolling their sleeves up. Bishop Willard thinks the best thing is to, you know, fuck over the people who aren't paying attention right now. Just like they did with my generation. Speaking to the Senate Budget Committee yesterday, Bishop Willard blathered on about the spiraling costs of retirement programs because the national debt is out of control. You notice they only worry about the national debt when it's something that has to do with people who work for a living and have traded off their very existence in exchange for a job. Yeah, Bishop Willard pontificated, for younger people coming along, we got to be able to find a way to balance these programs or we're going to find ourselves in a heap of trouble. Because I don't want to raise taxes. But you know what we could do? And this is some surefire Senator Bishop, the bona fide original gobbledygook. We've got to adjust long-term benefits, not for current retirees. Yeah, which is translated to the modern parlance, means the people getting Social Security right now or maybe soon, well, they're older folks and they tend to vote, and hell, they might even throw my ass out in Utah if I went after their checks. But we can always screw the kids. I'm so old, I can remember when journalists would say, well, and politicians too. Oh, you know, Social Security is the third rail of American politics. And Dwight Eisenhower wrote a letter to some cousin or something of his in which he said, any political party which seeks to harm Social Security will cease to be a national political party. He's a big kidder, that Ike. So what Bishop Willard is shitting bricks about is the fact that, well, he's got a lot of money and he doesn't want to pay any of it in taxes. And according to actuarial numbers, by 2034, 12 years from now, there will be 77 million Americans who are 65 or older. And there will only be 76.5 million Americans under 18. And I guess this is some sort of tipping point, because with older people outnumbering younger ones. But that's not even particularly fair. That number seems a little bit fudgy, because I'm part of the screwed generation. 65 or older will not matter in 2034. Let's see, 60. because I won't be Social Security eligible at all until 2030 at 67. And we'll probably still be working at something. Welcome to Walmart. I can't retire at 65. Oh, hell no. And recently, House Republicans said they'd like to raise the Medicare eligibility number from 65 to 69. They want to raise Social Security from 67 to 69. So that puts me at 2032. Ah, come on, GOP. Just make it 100 for both. And don't say that, Robin. They'll take you seriously. But we're back to this. The thing is, what Republicans like Bishop Willard are pissing and moaning about could have been fixed. It was tucked away inside President Biden's Build Back Better plan. Killed, incidentally, by Queen Jo to the mansion born. Because remember, mansions never do anything that benefits anyone whose name isn't Mansion. I don't know why this is so hard to comprehend. Oh, well. Isn't it funny, though, to watch Republicans grunt and bark and hoot about problems that they themselves create? It's almost like they hate Social Security and Medicare and would love nothing more than to destroy it. Huh. I mean, it's almost as though back when a Democratic Congress passed Social Security in, what, 1934? It's almost as though not a single Republican voted for it. You could almost swear that not a single Republican voted for it then, and Republican daddies and mommies have told Republican sons and daughters to go after it, to kill it, kill it, kill it, kill it. And their children have told their children, and their children have told their children, and finally, the great day of Jubilee is here! Now, what have we been saying? This tiny little radio community hangs on by the last dry-rotted thread of a frayed sneaker string. What have we been saying? Vote in 22 like your life depends on it, because it does. Haven't we been saying that? Is there anybody out there who thinks that that was somehow some sort of hyperbole? Because I swear to you, on my mother's grave, who would have been 97 today, it was not, at least not on my part. The Republican Party will not be happy until Americans are starving and dying in the streets. Or maybe inside some cardboard box hovel where our betters don't have to watch us die. It's who they are. Yeah, I had a conversation via message with Flavio the other day, and it was another story about how Joe Manchin, Queen Joe to the Manchin born, hurt America some more. And I said, you know, for once, maybe we've got a bumper sticker. Hate Joe Manchin, vote blue in 22. Because to get all Galaxy Quest about it, that is our only hope. elect so many Democratic senators that Joe Manchin can't hurt us anymore. Is that possible? Can we behave that intelligently? Can we act with that much conviction and concert? For the sake of my own behavioral well-being, I have to believe, and understanding that believe is the most dangerous word in the English language, that we can. Hell, I wouldn't be running for office if I didn't. I'd just pull my dress up over my head and go and sit in a dark room and eat chocolate and cry. It's hot in here. It's really hot in here. By the way, you did hear Ron and Raleigh say. Ted Cruz said on Fox that Democrats hate democracy. I guess we'll have to rely on Ted, Josh, Tom, Little Miss Three Names, and the rest of those mountebank charlatans, backstabbers, and liars who left out footpads and highwaymen to protect our rights. By the way, I have a question. Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Republican from North Carolina, transphobe, homophobe, said that the U.S. is a Christian nation. Does that mean we're a theocracy? I'm asking for a confused friend. Well, confused friend, it doesn't mean that we are a theocracy, but it means that if Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson ever had his way, well, let's just say I'll be selling cigarettes under the Southwest Guard Tower. Cheap. Cheap. And far too few of us are fully aware of the depth of their perfidy. Enhanced subsidies to the ACA, this is what Flavio and I were talking about. Enhanced subsidies to the Affordable Care Act, which were also included in Build Back Better, which was killed by Queen Jo to the Manchin born. Those expire in December, and some 14 million Americans will be, Flavio says, affected. I use less decorous language. I use language more often used by everyday Americans. Fucked! Queen Jo to the Manchin born. Fucked! 14 million Americans. It's a lot of fucking. Maybe I should use more decorous language. But I feel like this fucking didn't come with a kiss. And out in Arizona, Stan, because we were talking about Kirsten Curtsy cinema. Republican Governor Steve Ducey, no, Doug Ducey. I can't keep my Ducey's straight. I don't know if they have any trouble keeping the Ducey's straight. Maybe it's hard to keep them straight. Stop it, Spock. Doug Ducey signed a bill into law yesterday. And likely hundreds of thousands of Arizona voters will be purged from the rolls as a result. Suman, check your registration, my friend. Uh, Because as much as I hate to admit it, you're in their sweet spot. A group called A group called Stand Up America issued a statement yesterday saying history will judge Governor Ducey and his enablers, who through their actions, or in Senator Kyrsten Sinema's case, inaction, allowed for today's attack on our freedom to vote. Because, of course, Kyrsten Curtsy Sinema and Joe and Queen Joe to the Manchin born were instrumental in making sure that the rights of Americans to vote were not protected, as was the hope of President Biden. Had they moved to on a limited basis, eliminate the goddamn filibuster, the arguably single most anti-democratic aspect of congressional governance, well, we could have protected Americans' right to vote, but no. Kyrsten Curtsy Sinema and Queen Joe to the Manchin born said that a racist Senate mechanism was more important than anything like democracy. I hope history hangs around both their necks like a rotting albatross. Some people understand better than others what these Republican voter suppression bills are about. A district court judge in Florida by the name of Mark Walker, in a 288-page opinion, enjoined Florida's Republican voter suppression bill, good for him. Probably won't last. Won't make it past the appeals process. But the at least noteworthy part of this is that Judge Walker, in his opinion, said that this is entirely the fault of the courts, and in particular, the Supreme Court of the United States. He called out the Supreme Court of the United States in particular for its assault on the Voting Rights Act. It's kind of a big deal of a decision. You can read the analysis by Mark Joseph Stern over at Slate. SB 90 was the bill in Florida, and it makes it harder to register to vote. Voting by mail becomes much more difficult. Election observer rules have been thrown into hell. Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, the white supremacist adjacent governor of Florida who only became governor by the narrowest of margins and with the help of real live, no kidding, white supremacists and Nazis, signed it into law into 2021. It's taken this long for it to become adjudicated. Judge Walker, writing, used some language that for a jurist is rather strong. He said, having reviewed all the evidence, this court finds that, for the most part, plaintiffs are right. Thus, as explained in detail below, this court enjoins defendants for enforcing most of SB 90's challenged provisions. In so ruling, this court recognizes that the right to vote and the VRA, the Voting Rights Act particularly, are under siege. And he quoted Dr. King saying, to deny a person the right to exercise his political freedom at the polls is no less a dastardly act as to deny a Christian the right to petition God in prayer. Ooh, that's going to sting. He further found, Judge Walker did, that Florida, quote, has repeatedly, recently, and persistently acted to deny black Floridians access to the franchise, and namely the franchise being judicial speak for the right to vote. And in so doing, subjected Florida to preclearance. Then he said that Florida has a horrendous history of racial discrimination in voting. And then noted that the Florida legislature appears incapable of not trying to fuck over people of color. He didn't use that language. And defeat their right to exercise the franchise. He said, this court can no longer accept that the effect is incidental. And then he went after old Balls and Strikes John Roberts from 2013. Voting discrimination still exists. No one doubts that. The question is whether the Act's extraordinary measures, including its disparate treatment of the states, continue to satisfy constitutional requirements. Those were Roberts' opinions. Nearly 50 years later, things have changed dramatically, Roberts wrote, and those old Balls and Strikes. Largely because of the Voting Rights Act, voter turnout and registration rates in covered jurisdictions now approach parity. Blatantly discriminatory evasions of federal decrees are rare, and minority candidates hold office at unprecedented levels. And then proceeded to gut preclearance in the Voting Rights Act, thereby clearing the way for all those things that John Roberts said weren't happening anymore to start happening all over again. In her now famous and prophetic dissent, RBG said, throwing out preclearance when it has worked and is continuing to work to stop discriminatory changes is like throwing away your umbrella in a rainstorm because you aren't getting wet. They hated it when she made so much sense. I hope, and this is simply ancillary to the larger issue. I hope when she becomes Associate Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, I hope she writes in that kind of plain language as well. And I hope she needles the living bejesus out of those six punks, thugs, judicial brigands, and jurisprudential footpads and highwaymen. I really do. But of course, it's still going to be a 6-3 majority in which the aforementioned gang will continue to do as they will. And all those three can do is write opinions against it. And if you ever wondered how you can determine that John Roberts knew exactly damned well what he was doing when he gutted the Voting Rights Act, well, consider the fact that he will never, ever, upon reconsideration, vote to overturn his own ruling. Even if vast volumes of empirical evidence were put before him showing that the minute he opened the barn doors, all the racist horses went running out, he wouldn't do it. Judge Walker, writing in his opinion, said, in short, without explaining itself, the court has allowed its wholly judge-made prudential rule to trump some of our most precious constitutional rights. And in practical effect, Judge Walker put the state of Florida back under preclearance and said that Florida has to get federal approval before they pass any new laws that limit voter registration, absentee ballot drop boxes, or what has come to be referred to as line warming. And that's the process whereby decent citizens bring water, blankets, food, chairs for elderly people waiting in line, waiting. And that Florida can't limit that like Georgia does. You know, it is one of the signs of the absolute sickness of this, these voter suppression efforts. You know, if you're standing in line for hours, it is not unusual to finally feel like you're either going to bust or keep waiting and have to leave line to go potty. I'm sure there'll be a Republican there to challenge your gender when you get there. Never mind. But holding someone's place in line, yeah, that's another favorite. That's part of line warming. But this is how sick and twisted it is by comparison. I have been, in the past, in trainings for civil disobedience for people who plan to be arrested as part of a massive group. The processing of these arrestees is by definition time-consuming. There's so much paperwork. And so, people who are planning to be arrested are advised the morning of the event to don an adult disposable diaper. Because once they're arrested and they're put aboard the Park Service bus, assuming this is happening in D.C., they won't be able to get off the bus to go potty. And, you know, I mean, it's part of the cost of civil disobedience, and it's a strategy, and it's understandable within that context. But this is the kind of crap that shows up on law school exams. Is it an impermissible infringement on the franchise? Hell, is it a poll tax to make you as a voter in an undesirable racial or ethnic class? I hate the word racial. As a member of a class that Republicans don't want to vote, does it constitute a poll tax to have to go out and buy a bag of Depends so you can put it on just because you want to go and vote? And you'll know you'll probably wind up pissing or shitting yourself just trying to hold out long enough to exercise a right that is guaranteed under the Constitution of the United States? Feels kind of like a poll tax, in which the exercise of your franchise is literally depends on your willingness to soil yourself. That's where we are. That's where John Roberts in 2013 let too many states in this union go. Now, in the nice white precincts, nobody has to put on a pull-up to go vote. But humiliating people that Republicans don't want voting in the first place, well, if they didn't do shit like that, they wouldn't be Republicans now, would they? Sorry, Suman. Subject line, Doug Jackass. Here I am, fretting that the idiot signed the 15-week abortion law. Meanwhile, he's already trying to kick me off the voter rolls. God, it never ends, Robin. No, it doesn't, Suman. It never ends. Because they are desperately trying to cling to power that they know is falling like sands through the hourglass, through the cracks between their sausage-like fingers. The price of liberty is eternal vigilance. Or the price of a package of Depends. Jesus. Wow, says Lady B. Geez, Robin, we have more in common than I thought. My mother was also born this day. And she would also be 97 years old if she were still alive. Oh, my God. That just made the little hair stand up on the back of my neck. March the 31st, 1925. A sickly little white girl up a holler in West Virginia. Born 13 pounds, I'll have you know. Who so thoroughly wrecked her mama that mama was laid up for 2 months or more and was her last child. And across the country, Lady B's mama. I wonder if this kind of thing happens with other radio programs. That's just a beautiful thing to contemplate, Lady B. Thank you for sharing that. Lady B continues and says, yes, our generation is screwed. I'm only 53 and I cannot retire until I'm 67. Being a janitor has wrecked my body. But what else is there to do for a mass communications major with PTSD? We have no effective safety net. Hell, I have to work at poverty level hours and wages just to keep my medical benefits. Everybody just seems to be so upset. Everyone's on edge. And I fear our anger will explode. In a way, I feel like, and I hate to even return to this, I'm sorry. But that bullshit at the Academy Awards, when the millionaires are getting to this point, how the hell are the rest of us getting along? And I swear, I still hold this to be true, that there are yet children undreamt of and ungotten who will be writing think pieces about what happened last Sunday night. And forming up in their opposing battalions to argue the rightness or the wrongness of the situation. Howard Stern went so far, by the way, as to say that, wait for it, this is some hockey puck shit. And the duct tape. Howard Stern, the king of all media, went so far as to say that, and this is a quote, Will Smith and Donald Trump are the same guy. Let that sink in. Meanwhile, I think Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle are the same guy. Let that just lie there, because Lady B continues, Today, I was speaking to some white neighbors about the Oscars incident. They were shocked and hated it, too. But it's hard to explain how it feels to have loved and admired somebody from your youth, to love their humor and what you thought was a kind soul, and to see them lose it and just completely fall apart. It was like a psychic blow to my soul. What the fuck is going on with all of us? I know. And because my mind works the way it does, I immediately flash back to, I think it was it the first Men in Black movie when Will Smith says, "Don't start nothing, won't be nothing." Maybe the signs were there all along, because he delivered that line like he was, well, a method actor. And by the way, Brother Deacon Asa was asking me last night. Chris Rock was born in South Carolina, and his parents shortly thereafter moved to, I think, Crown Heights, Brooklyn, where he grew up. So, yes, Chris Rock and Stephen Colbert are both South Carolinians. But Lady B concludes saying, "Everybody is being affected by the economy, the pandemic, the war overseas. When will it end? Will we ever be the same? Will we ever be the America that we were taught to admire and dream about?" Jesus, Robin. How did shit go so wrong? Oh, that's another program, Lady B. That's a week or a month, or maybe it's maybe it's fully the 18 years of this little broadcast career of mine trying to sort out that essential question. Because, you know, if you were raised in this country, you were given a myth of it in the beginning. Kind of the way that babies begin eating on bland rice cereal, Pablum formula, and only later progress to other more food-like foods. Politically, there are a number of people in this country, and you can measure them by the number of people who are having shit hemorrhages about where people go potty, and shit hemorrhages about critical race theory. You can measure our current status by the number of those people. You know, because we also get fed early on a sort of historical pablum. I know that I was, as a little white child in a public school in Alabama. Of course, early on, I had some teachers who referred to what went down between 1861 and 1865 as the War of Northern Aggression, so take that with a grain of salt. But, you know, little Southern schools were not the only ones teaching about the upright morality of George Washington, and casually mentioning that charming little myth about chess pie. You know, the charming little myth about chess pie. Back in my day, the school actually published menus and had real food on it. And the lunch ladies were some of the most dedicated human beings and brilliant cooks I've ever known in my life. Our dear friend Nanette down in Boone County, West Virginia, was a lunch lady. And that woman can make a biscuit that will make your soul sing. Gone are the days. But every now and then, there was always a dessert at lunch, and every now and then, the dessert would read chess pie. I learned to read at an early age. I asked my mother, "Hi, Mom, what's chess pie?" And she told me the charming little story about how George Washington was asked what he wanted for his dessert that evening by his cook, enslaved cook, and he in his old Dominion, Virginia accent said, "Chispa." And that brilliant practitioner of the culinary arts went back to the kitchen scratching her head going, "The fuck is chess pie?" Chess pie? Hey! You know, you ever made chess pie? No? Me neither. Shit, we're going to have to invent something. And being the brilliant people that they were, enslaved though they were, against their will though they were, set about to create chess pie, which turns out to be this kind of really sweet, wonderful, spicy baked custard pie. And it's probably all of it, every last bit of it, absolute, unmitigated, utter bullshit. But we get taught these things as children because, you know, children can't... You can't handle the truth! But I guess now in places like Florida and Talabama and whatever else, if you tell the story of chess pie and mention the fact that the brilliant practitioner of the culinary arts who invented it was enslaved against their will, well, that might make some little white child have a sad. And so we can't teach that part. We just teach the pablum part. I don't know, Lady B, maybe that's part of how it went so wrong. Maybe. Randy Radar says, just Ketanji Brown Jackson's mere presence on the high court will drive Uncle Clarence nuts. That'll be worth it. One hopes. And it's just going to be more work, just like being on a Roman galley. Stroke. 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 See, this is why I don't do video, because you'd see me sitting here with my imaginary oar in my hand going, stroke. Stroke. But it'll probably drive all the other Republicans crazy, too. I can only imagine what it'll do to Justice Handmaid. It's true enough, going back to the beater in the theater, Rumble in the Jungle. Work with me here. Randy Radar says, remember the theme from The Karate Kid, wasn't it? I am a man who will fight for your honor. Yeah, it was. I think. Well, we're doomed for finishing up March with any kind of fundraising. I've been singing twice now. Jeremy in Vermont says, America was never the myth we've been indoctrinated to believe it is. That's why Trump's poison was so effective for about a third of this country, terminally, and another group slightly less than terminal, because he hates the groups they fear. Confirmation bias is a powerful poison. Going back to Howard Stern, I mean, Arthur says, there's a reason, I knew it, there's a reason you never see Trump and Will Smith in the same room together. It's so obvious now. Now we understand the orange spray tan. It's a cover-up. It's actually a porcelain, but, you know, by the time you get it, it looks orange. Shut up, Robin, stop. Let's go over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you?
You know, this is probably the wrong time to ask.
Okay. Well, see, I literally have no idea what you talked about for the first almost 2 hours of the program. because the only reason why I'm calling, because I just got off the phone with my sister, and she just told me a story, and I had to share it with people with, you know, with, that have some sense. Or
oh, dear. Do I need to reach for my own hockey puck?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Picture it. Arizona.
It's never it's never good when you're that emphatic about it. Go.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so, you know, my sister and my brother-in-law, you know, the Trump supporter, for those of you who don't know, my sister, and for, okay, for
the
those
more,
who...
The more you know... Who,
the worse you feel. So, for those of you who have never heard the sound of my voice... You know, so I can give you background. Hi, my name is Tracy. I am an African-American queer woman. And I have a sister who is a flight attendant, who married a pilot, who is a white man, and a Trump supporter. And yes, I spend no time with them ever, really. He's a nice enough fellow, but the bottom line is, you're a Trump supporter, and I don't, and you still support Trump regardless, even if he's, okay, let me just say, even if he no longer supported Trump or voted for Trump or what have you, you're still a Republican, so I still find you problematic. Okay, so let's get that out the way. They own several pieces of property, one of which is in Arizona, which is, they live up by some border town, which is like literally, I got there like half an hour, if that, from the border. So they have some friends, a couple that is white, that are white, and they've adopted apparently a couple of mixed race children, young men. So, well, Robin, are you settled?
I'm firmly ensconced. So, yes.
So the one of them is 13 years old. So they have decided to let the 13-year-old go on an unaccompanied, like a camping survivor trip along the in a desert, along the in a town in a city in a part of Arizona that's bordering that is along the Mexican U.S. border. Robin, now I found it problematic that they were going to send a 13-year-old child anywhere camping for the weekend by themselves. Because that, I mean, again, you know, I automatically flashed into that scene, you know, that arc on, 300 when they throw the boy out, you know, when the boy becomes the man and, you know, I'm picturing the wolf and all this and, you know, that, because again, I'm a city girl and I know people go camping and but last time I checked, nobody sends a 13-year-old, at least in my mind, would send a 13-year-old
What is this, a vision quest?
That's what, baby, girl, seriously, what's the entire...
I mean, is there going to be some sort of ritual mutilation at the end or something?
Seriously! And so when she was telling me this, I was already appalled by the thought of sending a child out in the Arizona desert alone. But then I heard the husband, and I don't know how you like them when I say husband. I heard.
Stop it.
The husband in the background saying, you know, that I heard the word black. And I said, wait a minute, wait, pump your brakes. I said, wait, did I hear black? Because, you know, they tend to accuse me of being, you know, overly, you know, emotional, black issues. And I said, wait a minute, are these people white? And they're like, yeah. And I said, wait. And the kid is white. Yeah. So the parents are white. And the kid is, I guess, biracial, and they're not sure if he's mixed. But bottom line is, he don't look white. I don't know if he's mixed with black and white, black and Latinx, whatever. They don't know. color is the ink white. And I said, Rachel, you guys live along in a border town, am I correct? In a town where, in a city, in a country where they throw unaccompanied minors in jail. There's no nice way of saying it. You can call it detention hall, whatever the hell you want to call it. It's jail. And I was like, well, there's a tiny law. I said, do you really think they ask their child, if they pick this child up, that they're going to ask him his last name? Do you really think they're going to kick? And then they're like, well, is that the Border Patrol? I said, do they know every single border? Is there going to be a department-wide notice that this child that is an American citizen and his dad, his adopted father, is a Border Patrol agent, so that means not to mess with him? But what, you know, and I didn't go into the fact about what about the ones that don't care that his father is a Border Patrol agent?
Well, see, I want to give you some validation on this, because Matt in San Francisco just wrote and said, not sure why I heard banjos when Tracy started her story.
Thank you. It's Arizona people. See, this is that part where that white privilege, where they got their blinders on, and I'm like, even before I found out that the ethnic makeup of the child, I'm thinking the people, these militias that, you know, okay, let's just take Border Patrol out of the equation. Let's take the ethnicity out of the equation. I'm talking about these coyotes and all these people that are the people that are along these trails that could hurt this child. Okay?
That doesn't seem, oh dear God, there's that loaded word, hysterical.
You know, because again, I live in the reality of the country and the world that we live in, Robert.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Now let's hit the child's ethnicity back into the picture. Okay, because people are evil and disgusting and despicable. Okay, so let's take the Border Patrol out of the equation. Let's go in the variable of these so-called militia and these border, you know, the protector of the borders into the mix. What about that?
That's
the bottom line. Would you send Ferg when Ferg was 13 years old, Robert?
No.
Would you have sent Ferg along the Appalachian Trail by himself?
Nope. Nice Appalachian Trail reference, Ferg, though. I got to give you the, no.
Do I get a cap off of that one?
Yes, you do. Because I hate to mention it, but there's some awful shit that happens along the Appalachian Trail.
I was about to say, do none of these people watch Dateline or 2020?
Yeah, it's like the scene. Oh my God, it's another scene from another science fiction movie that lives in my head. It's like the scene from Galaxy Quest where they land on the planet that has the beryllium spheres, and all the little small goblin people are there, and I think Sigourney Weaver says, look, they're going to help that one's hurt, they're going to help it, and the guy who later becomes Rock Ingersoll says, something terrible is going to happen. Have you people ever even watched the show?
Right, and look what happened, and don't look up.
Okay, there's another one. I mean, it's not like the cautionary tales aren't out there.
Okay, again, I'll take his ethnicity and all sorts of stuff. I'll take all of that up because you're all, as long as it's all right, you can ruin it. As long as it's all right. However, the bottom line is that's a 13-year-old child out in the wilderness in the Arizona desert by themselves. So that's why I was calling, because I have, like I said, I have no idea what y'all have talked about, you know, over the course of the show.
It just so happens that I've got the perfect story, because I'm that girl.
Crap, I just threw it up.
It was 1993. It was the second day. It was the second day of August, 1993. And a mama by the name of Doreen Roby let her little boy, 4 years old, walk to school.
Oh, God.
A 13-year-old boy beat him to death. This happened in the Finger Lakes region of New York State. Mrs. Roby said back then, "It's the first time I ever let him go anywhere alone, and it was one block down, same side of the street. He gave me a kiss and said, 'I love you.' He says, 'I love you, Mom,' and he went hopping off the sidewalk."
That's the last touch of song.
Yep. And the 13-year-old lured him off the sidewalk, saying he knew a shortcut. And the 13-year-old was eventually convicted. And at the age of 42, they finally let him out of prison.
Still young enough to do more damage.
After 29 years. And so the community there in the Finger Lakes region had a peaceful protest and said, please don't let him come back here. And so the Department of Corrections of the state of New York settled him in somewhere in the greater New York City area.
So if you were able, at 13 years old, you had no problem killing a child at 13, and you're not fully grown man, what are you capable of at 42 and being, institutionalized for 29 years? What other evil have you learned by now?
Well, see, they sentenced him to 9 years to life. He spent the juvenile time in a juvenile prison. And then they transferred him to an adult prison. They tried him as an adult. And he came up for parole for the first time in 2002. And his parents had to go, and the victims, the little boy's parents had to go and relive it all, get triggered all over again, and every 2 years after. And so they finally decided to let him go. And and at his parole hearing, and when he was 24 years old, he said, "I did it because I was bullied relentlessly. So I took it out on somebody further down the pecking order."
What did we talk about punching down instead of punching up?
Right. That's kicking down. And, your heart just goes out to the mom and the dad. That never goes away. And so the mom and dad said, just don't let him come back here. Just quit making us relive this. So, no. Under the circumstances you just described, no. No.
And, Robin, under any circumstances.
Right.
But even more so, in the world that we live in, a non-white child in an Arizona border town.
No, I'm sorry. This whole Vision Quest horse shit always gives me it always gives me the shivers.
Yeah,
because it's gonna be freighted with a bunch of I don't even know how to talk about
that. The appropriation of culture, because see, the thing is, I don't know where they're getting it from. I mean, maybe because Bob said something about the last name, the father's Italian. So I don't know. I know nothing about Italian culture. But I don't know. Do they have Vision Quest? Did they send their 13-year-old? I mean, I know they did in the Roman Empire and all that, probably, and all that. Hafeneva. I don't know if they still do, if they do it now.
Well, by the time you were a 13-year-old boy in the Roman Empire, they sent you to the during the Republican phase. They sent you to the Campus Martius, where if you were a patrician child, and that's who went, you were taught how to be a member of the Roman army. But what I was immediately thinking of was the, and we don't even know if it's true, but the stories told by the ancient sources of what would be done with young Spartan boys.
Right, that's what I'm, you know, Sparta, that's Greek, sorry.
Right.
Sparta, and that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, what is this? And if I told my sister, I said, what is this, a series of 300?
There you go.
You know, what the heck? Is y'all crazy? Because they would say, oh, yeah, you took him to Walmart to get his machete and all this. I'm like, what in the love of God
Wait, hold the hell on. Are you telling?
I forgot to tell you about the machete.
Are you? Well, no, I'm not. I mean, okay, machete. But you're loving parents, and you're going to send your kid on a Vision Quest with a Walmart machete. You're not even going to fucking REI.
Thank you. If you're going to do it, do it right.
Walmart machete. Walmart machete will go dull cutting butter.
Right. If you're going to do this, I should have brought that up. I'm like, if you're going to send this child out on a Vision Quest in the wilderness, again, repeat after me, Robert, in the Arizona desert. And you're not at least going to Patagonia or REI or someplace that has real camping equipment or, you know. And I said, what are these people, survivalists?
Well, it sounds it sounds like it. It sounds like it.
But if they're real survivalists, don't they have better equipment than that?
If they're real survivalists, they scare the shit out of me. I mean, another movie, Jerry Reed, Robin Williams, Walter Matthau, Survivors.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Not a dog alive can catch up with a car, an American car made before the catalytic converter. Jerry Reed.
That's true, though.
What is that? What is that? What is that doing in my brain?
I'm terrified for you that it is in your brain, Robin. I really, really am. So okay, this is not histrionics. I am not. Because I know I'm not, and I didn't need your eyes to confirm it because I know I'm a rational human being.
Okay, I got another question.
Uh-huh.
Has that little boy even been given the talk?
I was terrified to even ask because remember, did you see Colin in Black and White?
Yes.
On Netflix, did he ever get the talk? Because remember, his parents were Republicans as well.
Right.
Because in Republican land, the talk is not necessary because none of that exists.
Yeah, that's reverse racism or something. I whatever.
Right. So I can't keep up with these people.
You can't with these people.
You just can't with these people. So So the bug, you know, and so, I mean, his father's a Border Patrol agent, his adoptive father. Well, his father, because, you know. But see, like I told, because when I said all these things to Rachel, her mind went going, and she's like, dang it, sis. And I'm like, good. I said, you have me for the, because I have to, you know, I have to curb some of the things that I want to say to her, you know, to get her back into the reality of you are married to a white Republican. And so sometimes you're, you know, because she, and plus she's a millennial. So that's a whole, there's another generation of how I, you know, there's a generational thing between us. But a lot of her, some of her, you know, she can still have her, she still has some of her black militancy in her. But it's been tempered by the man she's married to.
Her coffee has a whole lot of coffee made in it.
I'm not even going to give her, you know, milk or cream. It's coffee made because he's just, anyway, that's a funny thought. But it's like, because so, some of the stuff she says, and I'm like, you would not have said that before you met, before you got with that man, but I'm going to leave it alone. You know,
that man, did you say that man?
Yes, I did. But some things aren't worth me losing my sister over. You know what I'm saying?
No, I get that. I do.
You know, but it's like, I just think about calling them black and white. And I meant to say, ask your friends this, you know, as gently as you can. Because I know they got Netflix, and just ask them to watch a couple, before they send that baby out into this, on this vision quest, over the hell it is, to watch Calling in Black and White. I think that should be required. I think anybody, any white person that is either going to try to, wants to foster or adopt a black or mixed race child, you know, mixed ethnicity child or any party, I think that should be required. I mean, along with hair care tips, not tips, but classes. Okay? You can't just put water on our hair and think that's all we need. And that there actually, and there has to be classes on our culture as far as our history. Stuff like this, so you don't raise a Clarence Thomas. That they are required to let Helene turn it down. That they are required to show what it is to be, what it is to be. Because, you know, Colin Kaepernick had no idea what it was to be black in this country. No idea.
No.
No. And that's dangerous. I'm not saying this has to be fear. Not trying to, you know, it does not need, there's no need to be fear based. You just need to be aware of what you're dealing with. And people who constantly ask us, though, that it's no, you guys are just blowing things out of proportion. You're just overreacting. You people are so emotional. Okay. Yeah, but when I put the fear, seriously, 13 years old. Hell, I wouldn't let a grown person go on it. First of all, these are the kind of things you don't, no one really should ever go on something like this by themselves anyway. Period. Especially a child. Hell, I mean, it's like when we drop kids off at home, unless they're a certain age, we can't drop them off at home alone. And you're going to allow somebody, a 13-year-old, to get, come on. I mean, remember when we were growing up, hell, we could be at home by ourselves. I mean, I used to babysit at 12 and like 14, 15 years old. Now you can't. You cannot. If I was going to drop off a kid and there's not at least an 18-year-old person at that house when I drop them off, I cannot drop them off. No way, no how. And you're about to send a 13-year-old. But then again, it is Arizona, so God only knows what their state laws are. Because
I know.
You know, so I mean, like I said, I didn't need confirmation. I didn't need validation. I just, you know, misery loves company. And so now it's in my head. Is there going to be some child wandering in the Arizona desert by himself along the border, the U.S.-Mexico border?
That just has disaster written all over it.
I am terrified for that baby. And the one day that I met this man down the street, and this guy, I thought, okay, hopefully either he is backing up or pulling out. Back it up. Awesome. So, I mean.
Well, Arnold wrote in from PA. And uh-huh. said, and understand, Arnold is effectively blind. He said, I ran contraband at 11 years old in New York City, LOL.
You're silly, Garrett. But Arnold, would you have, I mean, seriously though, I can't even tell you some of the stuff that I did out when I was 13. I was in the city, too. There was, you know, if there was a problem, if there was places that I could go to get help. If my mom wasn't around, and so I was in the city, I could go to a neighbor. You know, I had. I had help. There was access to help. This child is alone in the desert.
As Randy Radar points out, they got rattlesnakes out there.
I don't know I know rattlesnakes, but I don't know whether they're... Hold on a second. Are there coyotes and stuff in the desert?
Yes. Human and four-legged. Okay.
Yeah, that part.
Out in the desert, depending on where you are, there are also these curious looking little button mushrooms. Rhymes with coyote. Hey-ody.
Hi, coyote. I know that it's not like they're just throwing them out there. I know they had to have prepared him for something, but still, again. I'm sorry. I can't wait to tell my mother. So we got, you know, three generations, you know, conferring on this. Because my mom, baby boomer, me, Gen X, and then my sister, millennial. That's kind of funny, you know.
Yeah, no kidding.
That my mother has two generations of children. But that's kind of what, you know, but I'm sorry. Whoever is listening, you know, I really want people's opinion on this because it's troubling to me. It really is troubling to me to send a 13-year-old child out in the woods by themselves. I literally, when Rachel started telling me about it, and then I was already said, I gotta go. But then when I found out that this was a ethnicity child. I said, I really gotta go. Because I don't want to say anything about, you know, about trends or anything like that. I don't want to form an opinion, but I'm sorry. I've already formed the opinion. I just didn't want to say it to Rachel because I'm like, yeah, you're idiots. because again, these are things, and look, don't get me wrong. It is a good skill to have, to know how to camp. And if, especially if you're somewhere and you're driving through the desert or what have you, and you need to survive or what have you, all that stuff. But again, nobody should be out there by themselves, especially a 13-year-old. Because even if, okay, aside from, you know, the pedophilia and the child molestation and stuff of the Boy Scouts, even when they go out and do their camping thing, is it or is it not supervised? Do they send, you know, those boys out in the woods by themselves when they go camping? Even when I went camping, the one time, I used to go to summer camp, and one time, they asked if any of us wanted to go backpacking. And I, like an idiot, said, sure, I'll go. Yeah. And now we know why Tracy will never go camping again. Or backpacking.
That's just another word for going into the woods and pretending you're homeless.
Yes, a houseless. That's what we call it, houseless.
House. Unhoused.
You know, unhoused, right, unhoused. But it's like, yeah, no. I mean, it was, some of it was fun, except for, speaking of rattlesnakes, I'm sitting on a log minding my own business and we're talking, you know, and all of a sudden a hush comes over the group and the camp counselor's like, don't move. And I'm like, what? But just don't move. And when the camp counselor tells you not to move, you just don't move. There's a rattler behind me. Mm-hmm. Yet another reason why I don't camp cook. So they handled it. I have never seen somebody move so quickly in my life. He jumped over me, decapitated the rattler, and then the freaky part was the rattler was still going in the head with his hair cut off. Yet another reason why Tracy don't go camp. You know, it's just, there's just things, you know, again, my idea of robbing is going to a hotel that does not have room service.
There we go.
That's roughing it.
That's like the Southern definition of natural childbirth.
How drugged are you?
Giving birth without a full face of makeup.
Okay. People do that? Are you kidding me? No, look. Remember, your girl don't wear makeup. So, since I'm not a makeup wearer, I don't understand it. I really don't. But I remember I had a really good friend, and we're still friends, when I went to San Francisco State. And there was one of the dormitories was called Verducci Hall. It was one of the newer dormitories. And it was like the only new dormitory. And it was like a high rise, actually. And we would have we would have fire drills. We never knew if it was a drill or if it was real. Well, Miss Laurel would not leave. She's like, I don't care if the building's on fire. I'm not going downstairs without my face off. I'm like, wow. And she was serious. She was serious. She was not going to go out without her makeup on. I'm like,
I'm at that phase of my transition where I try not to, too.
I understand, I guess, but like I said, because for, like I said, for somebody who doesn't wear makeup and who literally at times just rolls out of bed and throws on whatever and puts her hair up in a bun and leaves, you know, because my sleep is way too precious. I'm like, wait a minute. If I have to wear makeup every day, that means I have to get up earlier. Then I already get up to do all this stuff. And sleep is far more precious to me than trying to look cute. But again, that's not me. But I respect and understand women who, you know, or anyone, because it's not just women who wear makeup. Let's get that straight.
Oh, it looks like there's a significant uptick in cis guys, and the advertising is being. You know, you can tell something's catching on when the capitalists start pitching it to someone they haven't pitched it to before. And there's a lot, right. there's a lot of makeup being pitched to a lot of cis guys.
Yes. And good on them. Good on them. I mean, you know,
it all started in the mid 80s with just trying to get cis guys to take care of their skin.
Right.
I remember two of the first product lines to come out were Lauder for Men and Aramis Lab Series. And
right.
Aramis Lab Series was fantastic. They had a shaving cream that actually contained benzocaine, and it cut down on nicks.
I have not.
Cut that because it numbed your face.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, it cut down on nicks in a big way. But then it turned out that benzocaine is dangerous for women who are or may become pregnant. So it disappeared from the market. And that was a real loss back then. I need to send out thanks to our dear friend Jessica up in the greater Rochester co-prosperity sphere, who just got our fundraising down under $800 to finish March. That's how deep the hole is. We're down at $790. Jessica said a little something to celebrate the International Transgender Day of Visibility. Much love to you, Robin, and all of our trans siblings, including the non-binary individuals. Whether you're out and visible today or in the closet, we see you, we love you, we validate you, and we celebrate you. Hear, hear. Thank you, Jessica.
Hear, hear.
Thank you so very much. And, I mean,
hear at the same time.
Yes. Would you care to join me in a huzzah? One, two, three. Huzzah!
Huzzah! Huzzah!
It's a big day. It's an important day.
It's a very important day. And I'm glad I caught, you know, other than my story about, you know, the possible kidnappers. Oh, let me stop. I'm sorry. It's that mother in me, that older sibling in me, that just protecting the protector in me. And there's this, no way. I mean, I let Alex, and, you know, you freaked me out about the, you know, the little 4-year-old, because I let Alex walk to school, because it was like, he's basically from my house, my apartment to Alex's school, it was a block and a half. And it was on the same side of the street. And fortunately, nothing ever happened to him. But it's just like, and then of course, when he got older, he started telling me stories about, you know, the predators that would be lurking. I don't know. Of course, my heart dropped, because I raised him in such a way that he was very careful. Like, I tell him, never walk too close to the street. Always stay, you know, far away from the curb. Walk as far away from the curb as you can. You know, never walk up to the car. You know, all that stuff. You know, so nobody can clean up. They would actually physically have to, it would not be easy for them to grab you off the street. Because that almost happened to me once. Yeah, that. So, things that you have to, unfortunately prepare your child for. I to this day. Especially like when,
I got the living be Jesus stomped out of me walking to school for the first 6 years of my life on a regular and routine basis.
Jesus.
And it was, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 blocks. Eventually got to where, got to where I could ride my bike. Then my bike got stolen on Earth Day 1970. It was, of course, purple.
Of course it was purple. Well, the phrase, this is why we can't have nice things. You know, there's always that person. It's always that bully. It's always what have you. But, yeah, when Alex, when he got older, He was telling me the horror stories, and I'm just like, why did you tell me this stuff? Because he didn't want to scare me. I said, well, it's scaring me, and there's, I'm walking you to school. thank God nothing happened to him, but still, to know that at some point that somebody will try to snatch your child?
No. The things that live in my memory, I come from a time when there was a federal advertising campaign for, because everything had a cute little, we didn't call them avatars then, but they had a cute little avatar of a little pony with like one patch over its eye, and Patch the Pony says, nay, nay, stay away, don't talk to strangers.
And forgetting that most of the danger comes from within the home.
Well, there's that.
Because we have all these campaigns about, stranger danger, but nobody ever talked about the dangers from the brothers, the uncles, the mama's boyfriend, your stepdad, your dad. So your troop leader, or your priest,
or your youth pastor,
they talk about all these stuff, you're stuck in the guy, in the van with the puppy, or offering you candy, which does exist. These people are, this is not a one-off. These people do exist. But you didn't prepare the babies for the stuff about the people that they're supposed to trust, the people that are supposed to protect you. They don't talk about that.
No, and it's authoritarian structures. I mean, it's almost become a cliche for, any headline that begins with youth pastor. You know what the rest of it is, and exactly. just to go back to young Maddie Cawthorn, who said that he had been invited to cocaine fueled sex parties.
Holy shit!
Well, people are generally saying, he's a little liar. And even the Republican senator from North Carolina is like, no, this kid's full of shit. But it's certainly getting traction, and, among the cue ball crowd. So enter Lauren Witzke, which is not far from Lauren Whiskey. At one point in time, the Republican Party of Delaware nominated her to run for Senate.
Yikes.
Well, she went on a program called the Stupiders Show. I'm sorry, Stu Peters. Stewed, beaned, baked, boiled, braised, broiled, barbecued. But the Stu Peters Show. She said that, and of course, she's MAGA, MAGA, MAGA.
MAGA, 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 MAGA.
And, I mean, such a Karen, you know. Blonde.
Like Karen, like. Is she Karen? Wait.
No, she wants to see. She wants to see the manager. Here she is. Here she is talking to stupiders.
We only learned about the few that got arrested. The few being again Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein. And apparently the names are going to go to the grave because Ghislaine is staying quiet right now. Prince Andrew is not going to get prosecuted. And we don't know. The politicians.
We will never
will carry
know
on.
Who was on that list.
No, we will never know.
That there were seated representatives on that list.
We're not now.
People in the world were buying a service from Jeffrey Epstein. They were buying children. They were buying prostitutes from Jeffrey Epstein. And we will never know because there is no justice in this country.
No, you're right. They're trafficking in tears. They're trafficking in torture. And look, freckle Christians like us. We're Americans. We're Christians. And we're absolutely disgusted by what we're seeing here.
Yes.
We are not going to sit by and let it carry on. The question we've had is, what do we do about that, right? Well, what I tell you this, when we hear congressmen like Congressman Cawthorn speak out in this manner, we have to applaud them. We have to stand with them. Because what he's doing is he's showing us behind the scenes. He's showing us behind the curtain.
Yes.
The emperor's not just naked. The emperor's having sex with a kid.
Yes.
Okay?
And not only that, now McCarthy's getting involved.
McCarthy.
He has he heard about it. It sparked some outrage. So it's upset some people in the GOP that
I bet it upset
would have the audacity to expose them for the orgy attending, drug sniffing, children's raping people that they are. So now McCarthy is intervening again, just like he did with Marjorie Taylor Greene. I wonder if, like, maybe he's going to have to do his public humiliation ritual, Madison Cawthorn, his apology tour, just like he did to Marjorie Taylor Greene, instead of going to Madison being like, hey, listen, who is doing this? Because we need to know this. But they all cover for each other. He's going to get him to shut up. He's going to threaten. He's going to intimidate him and make sure that this is never brought up ever again.
See, there's only one
problem. Learned about.
There's only one problem, Tracy. Maddie Cawthorn met with Kevin McCarthy, and Kevin McCarthy says, okay, cards on the table, kid. Oh. Yeah. Who was it? I can't say. Shut up. And there we are.
So that was it.
So, you know, McCarthy won't talk to him except McCarthy, you know, talk to him. McCarthy,
talk to him.
The McCarthy with the spine made of Jell-O.
Right. Who are these people?
But one of my personal favorites, and I think you'll enjoy this as much as I did, our buddy John in Central PA sent this along to me earlier today. It's a moment. It's one of those moments from the House of Representatives. And, of course, there is a Ketanji Brown Jackson tie-in. Because scary black lady.
There has to be.
Well, Representative Good, curiously named, of the Old Dominion, Virginia, was waiting to speak after, God, is that Virginia Double X Fox? I don't know. But he was going, it always begins, you address the speaker's chair. The speaker's not always there. There's a speaker pro tem, you know, or somebody sits and handles the gavel. Because Nancy can't be there all the time. And so this maggot rises to address, and I don't even know, we have no idea what this, as John put it, this neo-maxi-zoomed weeby was going to talk about, but it's how he addresses the chair. Listen carefully. It's only 13 seconds long.
The gentleman from Virginia is recognized for 2 minutes. Thank you, person speaker. And I say person speaker because I'm not a biologist, and out of respect to our Supreme Court nominee, I don't feel qualified to say Madam Speaker. But I do rise in opposition.
Got that? You want to hear it again?
Okay. No? No. Well, on a happy note, I just sent you, on my travel, as I was driving down the street, and I never noticed this mural before. I just sent you. It's a mural of Chadwick Boseman, Nipsey Hussle, and Kobe Bryant. I just sent you. It's in the text. It is gorgeous.
Oh, that's beautiful. That is beautiful.
Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? So, you know, that'll help, you know, yeah, it's sad that all three of them are gone. But it's a beautiful painting. The beach, I mean, one day I'm going to, you know, when I have this, I'm over here, I'm going to actually physically get out the car and take a better picture of it. See, like, stuff like this, this is what I want my tour to encompass. You know, I'll encompass on my tour, rather. It's, you know, the murals all over the city of, like, Nipsey Hussle. This is the first time, though, that I've seen one with Chadwick Boseman on it. So typically you see Nipsey Hussle and Kobe. Either Nipsey Hussle and Kobe, or usually it's or Nipsey Hussle by himself, Kobe by himself, or Kobe and Gigi. I've never seen, this is the first time I've actually seen one with Nipsey Chadwick and Nipsey Chadwick and Kobe. So it's gorgeous, isn't it?
That's exquisite.
So, you know, those are the kind of things that I want to do is, you know.
No, but that clip just chaps my ass.
Yeah, that just, you know, I have to show you, I want you to see something nice to cleanse your palate. How about that? Yeah. So cleanse your palate from what you just listened to earlier.
It's like when you're like testing perfumes and at the cosmetics counter, they've got a little container of coffee, and then the next perfume smells like coffee.
Right.
Or palate cleansing with a saltine when you can get them. And then everything, it's like this, this next wine tastes like saltine.
Right, it tastes like saltine.
It's crisp. Yeah,
it's crisp. It's crisp because you just ate a pack of motherfuckers. I'm sorry.
It's very dry, like that mouthful of oyster crackers I just ate.
Yeah. That part. Oh my God! These people. What kills me is this performative outrage, right? Because when it's
the radical leftists have ruined our country so that we don't even know what a woman is anymore.
Right. But it's just like, but yes and yes. You know, they're not outraged by children being thrown into cages.
No.
Or people, you know, storming. Now, you know, like all those people who were screaming that Will Smith stormed the stage at the Oscars.
Stormed!
But yet, stormed, I tell you, stormed! To
raced.
Say he stomped it. That brother sauntered off the stage. Okay, that was.
I mean, I would buy in with Strode.
I would say Strode up the stage. There might have kind of been a meandering. Okay, you know.
I think if you're meandering, you're kind of wanting in purpose. I don't think there was lack of purpose.
No, yeah, you're right. There was a purpose. There was a purpose. You're right. Okay, I give you that. But January 6th was a peaceful protest. Will Smith stormed the stage. They, you know, they didn't storm the Capitol. No. We're going to agree with Trump.
I mean, it
see what I did there? See what I did there?
I see what you did there.
Okay. That part.
Yeah, it's like right it's before like you called. Right before you called, I had that note from Lady B asking, "The fuck has happened to us?" Yeah, because
did she write another letter, or was she on the, or did she, or was no, she on the air?
No, it was just a couple of paragraphs. But it turns out her mama and my mama were born on the same day in the same year.
Really?
Isn't
wow.
That wild?
For real?
Mm-hmm. March
31st, 1925. That's pretty cool. Well, here's another fun fact. Our lady, Miss Bernadette's birthday is the same day as my graduation day.
Cool.
May 21st.
Double party.
Double party. The double party, double party. That part. Oh, my God. So, and I ordered in because the girl's just kind of, you know, I'm dragging. I have no energy. And, of course, I probably need a different dosage on my medication. But the psychiatrist that I was working with has moved this on to another clinic. So now I have to wait for them to get a new psychiatrist. So, anywho, I'm just kind of dragging, but. So there's a Italian restaurant in the valley called Frankie's.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Tardana. And they make their pasta from scratch, or do they? But I do know they make their dressing from scratch. James Robin, the best blue cheese dressing you have ever had in your life.
Chunky?
Is this. Chunky blue cheese dressing. You know, it's just so good. So yesterday I had, and they give you so much food. I had, it looks like penne pasta, but it's not called, it's on their menu, it's not called penne. It's called mustard. I'm not going to try to say it, but it begins with an M. And but it's not quite penne, but it's like a longer, thinner version of penne pasta. And I had that with pink sauce.
Ooh, pink sauce.
So I think you said something. You were saying about vodka sauce, and I'm like, oh, was that you or somebody? Oh, no, vodka sauce. I'm like, no, this is different. Pink sauce. No, because I didn't talk to you yesterday. I think it was my mom or somebody. No, it was my friend. And he's like, pink sauce. I said, no, it's not vodka sauce. Whereas vodka sauce is a pink sauce. No, pink sauce has, Alfredo and marinara sauce in it. Whereas vodka has, you know, it's just, there's a difference. He's like, oh, okay. But I love a pink sauce. And I typically get it when I get a pink sauce. I also get it with tons and tons of mozzarella cheese in it and the pasta. And not quite baked, but just kind of, they kind of like broil it to give it a, you know, the crust. But here's my, I love technology, but rant for today. I don't know why all of a sudden John has this issue with calling into restaurants because when you call a restaurant to place the order, you can say the stuff like you want extra this, or you want this, or you want extra bread and stuff like that. Whereas when you place an order online, for whatever the reason, even when you, if there's even like a, you know, a part where you can write in notes where you want extra stuff or what have you, they don't, doesn't mean they're going to read those notes, right? And Jan just cheated me. I'm like, why is this? Why are you so afraid all of a sudden to use the damn phone? You old. You grew up when we were still using numbers for the first three numbers of the phone number, you know?
What? Right. Yeah.
So why, what is this aversion you have to calling in the order? Oh, and because it's like, you know, because I'm a, you know, it says, because this is what I wanted, or I ordered it online. I'm like, when did you become this technology? The woman who, like, I was in the dead, almost dead asleep, and she calls me, this TV's not working. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I'm
that was a technical glitch. I did not just laugh.
Yes, you did. I heard you.
No, that wasn't me.
And I'm like, don't let you, you're lying. Your ears are lying to you. Are we playing that game, Robin?
Yes, we are.
Are we playing? We're playing Don't Believe Your Lying Ears and Your Lying Eyes? Okay. 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 We'll play that game.
Oh, by the way, we're running a little short of time, and this might be a nice one to wrap up on. You know, the Sparkle Fart propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Patrol.
Oh God!
They're constantly saying
they're constantly.
I hope not. I hope they're smarter than that. But they're constantly, you know, goddamn Democrats never do anything. They haven't done anything. They've been in there. They had power, and they're completely oblivious to the existence, apparently, of Queen Joe to the mansion born. Well, I want to take a moment and at least give kudos to the House of Representatives as led by Nancy Pelosi. I don't know if it's happened yet, but there's a vote that is supposed to take place, or was supposed to take place today or this evening. I don't know. It took too long. It never should have been necessary, but, well, we have Republicans, and we have capitalism, and we have Democrats who have daughters who were running a vast pharmaceutical empire. And so we know. And so we
know who you're talking about there, Robin.
Yeah, I know. Nobody knows.
Imagine. I'm sorry.
There's an official title now. Queen Joe to the mansion born.
Okay. Fine.
So, because of that, we all know how ridiculous the price of insulin has become.
Yes.
And we also know, most of us, I think, that the scientist who developed insulin did so for the good of humanity.
That part.
And not with an eye toward the profit margin.
That part, number two.
Finally, and just by way of numbers, 7.4 million Americans use insulin to manage their diabetes. And those 7.4 million Americans pay eight times as much as an insulin-dependent diabetic does in the rest of the so-called developed world. It is the highest cost annually of any so-called industrialized nation. Insulin-dependent diabetics are out about $11,000 per person. So 7.4 million times $11,000. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of damn money, especially if you're on a fixed income.
The majority leader of the House, speaking yesterday, Steny Hoyer, said a drug that has been off protections by copyright for a long period, and I think he meant patent, for a long period of time, it still sees prices 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 times the price of production. So we need to deal with that. And so the House was set to take up a piece of legislation that would limit the cost of insulin to $35 per month. And what it does
that's
is
still
it,
too much, but I'll take it.
Yeah, it is. It's, well, I mean, it should be free.
It should be free.
But, you know, so should my estrogen. But so should metformin. So should blood pressure medication. So should heart medication. So should et cetera, et cetera. But the bill says that private health insurance companies can't charge more than $35 or 25% of a plan's negotiated price, whichever is lower, beginning next year for some patients. And for every patient by 2024. And the sad thing is it was already in the Build Back Better plan. But of course, Queen Jo to the mansion born took that away from us. Because he was afraid that I don't know. He was afraid that I don't know. Lazy Americans would start just laying around shooting insulin or something. God bless them.
Right.
But back on March 1st, 30 days ago, with the with his State of the Union address, President Biden called for a fix. And so the House is voting on the proposed fix. And the Senate, of course, is doing their own thing. Bless his heart, Senator Raphael Warnock has his own idea to cap it at $35 in the Senate. Senator Warnock said in a video, "I'm a pastor, I'm on the ground, and so I know that everybody knows somebody with diabetes." Bless his heart. Joe Manchin doesn't.
No.
Meanwhile, I don't know why Axios interviewed the man who's contending for dumbest person in the United States Senate. By that I mean the junior senator from Alabama, Tommy the Tuber, who will soon be the senior senator from Alabama. Jesus Christ. He said, "I'd be for some kind of regulation where we can help. Too many people are paying thousands of dollars a month. I'm not big on regulating process, but that one's costing a lot of people a lot of money."
Duh.
I'm guessing his Mensa invitation got lost in the mail.
Yeah. Robin, okay, look. I am by no shape, form, or fashion a Rhodes Scholar or something like that, but I'm pretty fucking intelligent,
sure.
You know? Yeah. And the lack of education. And these people are basically, they're supposedly running our, these are the people that have, people have voted and entrusted to running our country, and it, as you say, it gives me the fucking heebie-jeebies. Because to me, I'm sorry, and I know they can't test people, but I'm sorry. Why isn't there at least, you know, if you're going to run for office, especially the Senate, I mean Congress, shouldn't they have at least a rudimentary knowledge of civics? Of how government works?
It's not a crazy notion, but it's also not a notion that's particularly in vogue with the Republican Party. So here's the skinny on insulin. The House Oversight Committee issued a report, the majority Democrats did back in December, and they found that insulin was among 12 different medications, the ones that were examined by the committee, and the manufacturers between 2016 and 2021, the manufacturers jacked up the price on insulin more than 250 times.
oh, my God.
Now, we know how it goes with me and Cyphron. But 5 years, so that's 50 times a year.
50 times a year over the course of 5 years.
Almost once a week. That's just a little less than once a week.
It's been once a week. You're only 2 weeks shy, Robin, of once a week.
Yeah.
So let's just do it like that. 2 weeks, you know, almost, no, 2 weeks. Out of the 52 weeks, because even you and I, because we're not, neither one of us, I think my cipher might be just a smidge better than yours.
Don't say.
I'm just saying a smidge. A smidge. But both of us, even us, we know there's 52 fucking weeks in a year. And so, like you said, 50. So on for 2 weeks out of the year. And let's just say that's during the Christmas holiday. That's Christmas. When shit shuts down.
Right.
So let's just say for those 2 weeks, these motherfuckers have a heart. But other than that, as soon as the first of the year rolls around, game on. So let's just say for the last 2 weeks of December. So they got it.
So they're getting it done. Let's see how the vote breaks out. How many Republicans do you think will vote for this bill?
Well, we got Susan. Hey, wait. Miracles do happen. Susan Collins.
That's the Senate.
I know it's the Senate, but she's still a Republican.
Yeah, but I'm
still a Republican.
They're voting on this in the House.
I know. I'm just talking Republicans. I know Senate. In the House, and it's two totally different things. I know that, but what I'm saying is miracles can happen. We got one yes vote for her, but who knows? There might be maybe one congresspersonal that says, you know what? My mom or my sister or somebody that yeah. they might, that, you know, that, that might take that, that, you know, remember? Okay. When the Grinch stole Christmas and his heart started beating and started getting big when he started hearing the little people singing and his heart started growing. Maybe something like that might happen when it comes to diabetes. I know I'm an optimist, but it could happen.
Okay, here's a better wager. This is simpler. What do you think the odds are of Liz Cheney voting for it?
I take that bet.
All right. We got a bet. Let's make it a nickel.
All right. Cool. I take that bet. I'm willing to risk a nickel on my girl Lee. You know, because remember, if we had a bet on Joe Manchin doing a yes vote,
I'd be paying.
Ketanji, you'd be paying me.
By the way, we gotta get out of here. But one last thing, Republican, good God fearing, upstanding, bubble believing, Christ centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Tom Tillis of North Carolina has declared that he simply cannot vote for Judge Jackson's confirmation because to allow her onto the court would constitute court packing.
I'm sorry, I didn't hurt your ears, did I, when I did that outburst?
That wasn't great, but yeah. One black woman making up one vote in a 6-3 majority is court packing.
How many white people are on the court right now?
Well, no,
I'm not even talking conservative or anything. How many white people?
It depends on how you define them. I mean, there's Balls and Strikes and Ann's Boy Neil and Sammy Bad Breath and Brat and Justice Handmaid and I reckon Elena Kagan and I reckon
Clarence Thomas
and Sonia Sotomayor. Wait, did you just promote him to white people? Oh, that was a worthy setup.
Does Wishy make it so, Robin?
It's a hell of a hateful wish. We got enough problems on this side as it is. No. I will not allow that. The chair will not allow that. That's
it. You see how I slipped that in? That was good.
That was brilliant. But the thing is, that is a classic case of the camel's nose under the tent, because what you're going to do next is you're going to be trying to palm off Jesse Lee on me.
Yes, because he really, really, really wishes he was white.
And that is something.
Oh, God, he wishes.
And that is something up with which I will not put.
I'm sorry, but I just wish I could have been. I just wish I could have seen the look on your face when I said, as you're naming everybody, and I said, and Clarence Thomas.
No. There's sometimes I kind of wish we did do video, but we don't. Because there was a W.C. Fields. There was a W.C. Fields. Not a, you know, Fields was the master of the triple take, and that's not easy. A double take is just.
But a triple take is hard.
And I did a W.C. Fields triple take in that moment.
That was.
I have my sources, and I hear that that's what goes on.
With him and Miss Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God. I'm gonna have to pour bleach.
I'm fresh out of coffee and saltines. I can't cleanse my palate.
I can't do this. Now we gotta do a ritual cleansing and something that even bleach is, I don't even think bleach is strong enough to get rid of what we just conjured. Thank you, Robin, for that. God damn it.
I'm gonna go eat plain yellow mustard straight from the jar. Will that do? And maybe shake in some Lowry's seasoned salt. You reckon that might exercise it?
Something. Yeah, that might exercise it. Maybe throw in some sriracha and some red rooster hot sauce. Well, sriracha's not black, so we need some mustard, some Lowry's, some red rooster. I'm trying to think of everything that can possibly, you know, some really good, you know, barbecue something
maybe we need an Afro Sheen product called Soul Relaxer.
Soul Relaxer, again, like I said, my favorite line in Summer of Soul. So this every time, I mean, of all the great lines between that and what Red Fox said about, but the air, the smell of apple sheen. Let's talk about that. Let's marinate with that, and let's let that waft over us. The smell of apple sheen and fried chicken. Just inhale.
Those 11 secret herbs and spices.
Right, just inhale the Afro Sheen while meditating on the best commercial ever, the Afro Sheen commercial.
The Frederick Douglass commercial, yes.
The Afro Sheen commercial and thinking and inhaling the scent of Afro Sheen and fried chicken while meditating on the Frederick Douglass Afro Sheen commercial, and I think we'll be fine.
All right, we gotta get out of here.
We gotta go. So good night, my sweet my girl. I'm gonna be okay. We'll be fine.
Letting go now. Letting go now.
Yeah. Let it go. Lord Jesus. All right. Good night, baby, Tracy. And good night, Corn family.
Bye now.
What's the point of being good? There's no fun in that.
Yeah, that's right. Bye. So we come to the close. March is done. And March is done with a $790 deficit. Friday on the front porch tomorrow, I am told that Sparky will once again be in absentia. He's got a special day planned, and I think it sounds like fun, and I hope he and everyone involved has an absolute blast. A reminder, please go and share that Facebook post. There's no picture with it or anything. It's getting no traction at all. Please go and share it. Thank you to Jeremy for sharing it. Thank you so much. And seriously, you know, Jessica made reference to it. I have been that trans woman. Watching the trans day of visibility come and go and wondering if I would ever know what it felt like to celebrate it out and proud. So, as Jessica alluded, if you aren't, please know nonetheless how much you are loved and how valid you are. And that those of us who are out here rooting for you, hoping for you, dreaming for you, and waiting for you. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky. Thank you, Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Billions and billions of hours served. Remember, please, when Podbean is busy sucking, White Rose is always there. And some other streaming services do pick up from White Rose. I think one aspect of TuneIn does, and I think Stitcher does. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Now a union shop, proudly. Look up Devil Put the Coal in the Ground. That Finger Lakes Film Festival is streaming it, and all it takes is a $10 contribution to the Finger Lakes Film Festival. Please stay safe. I'm scheduling my fourth booster, or my second booster, my fourth total injection. I hope you will as well. Wear your mask when you're out among the unwashed, or the people who drink pee and rub their gums with horse paste, and etc. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, maintain your social distancing 15 to 20 feet if you possibly can. And of course, if you happen to run across somebody who addresses you as person because Ketanji Brown Jackson don't know what ain't no biologist. Avoid that person like the plague because God knows he is. Later.